Right, okay, so we're here with Steve Judge, episode number 54. Steve, welcome.
Thank you very much, John.
How are we?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good, thanks. Yeah, really good. I've been a bit ill last week, but right. I'm back on it this week. And yeah, full systems, ready to go.
Yeah.
I'm catching up as well, but I've got a lot of things planned this week, so
fantastic.
Yeah, feeling good.
Fantastic. There's so much been happening for you as well, hasn't
there? Yeah.
Which we'll talk about shortly. So, just if anyone wants to find out about Steve, I mean, LinkedIn's probably going to be a good place to go.
Yeah.
And your title on there is 2 times world champion.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
International motivational speaker, runner of Reaching Your Goal workshops, and personal life coach.
Wow, I haven't even put author on there. You know, there's more to add.
Author.
Yeah, I know. Which, I can't keep up with it.
It's interesting though, because like there's so much to do, isn't there? Like you've just said, then you've not even got author on there. You've just got your new book out as well, which we're going to come to soon.
Yeah.
But like, when does it stop? When do you stop putting all this up?
Yeah, I think you can stop at any time you want. But I think once you, if you're getting a buzz from it, if you're enjoying it, and if you're completing your why, then you keep going. My why is very much to help and inspire and motivate people.
Sure.
So I'm always thinking of more ways to do that. So I'm doing that with the talks, the presentations as a speaker. I'm doing that as the workshops. I then wanted to do a book. So that's another thing that I'm sure. putting on to inspire more people. So yeah, it always goes on as much as you get a buzz from it.
I think that's the thing. What happens if you stop getting the buzz? Do you just stop or do you find a way to kind of reevaluate and go again?
Yeah, I mean, if you stop getting a buzz, then I would always say that you've got the wrong goals.
Mm.
You've got to choose that. Choosing the goal is ultimate. People always ask me how to stay motivated, how to keep going. It's about choosing the right goal in the first time. Now, how you choose that is up to you. And it's about just kind of closing your eyes, having that visualization, thinking about what makes you happy. What's that thing that you really want?
Sure.
That thing that gets you really excited inside,
yes.
makes you a little bit giddy, makes you more almost a little bit nervous about completing it, about doing it, because it's such a big, amazing thing. You think, wow, if I do ever get that yacht, or if I do ever release that book, or if I ever do that thing, then, you know, how am I going to feel? And that's the thing. Once you've got that as your goal, as your dream, your vision, then keep thinking about it all the time. I think about mine every single morning.
What is yours?
My vision. So my vision at the moment is very much being a speaker, and then I add on to that. So it's walking onto the stage, it's having an amazing audience in front of me, like thousands of people, everything going well, everything going smoothly. And then I add on to things like this. So I'd love to be driven there and driven back.
Yeah.
Instead of me driving there, finding directions and getting lost on the way and stuff like that. To have my own, a chauffeur sounds really posh, but just a driver, I'll just call them a driver. But then also I've now added to that. So coming off to a standing ovation, but then coming out into the hallway or the foyer where there's a table and my book. And there was a queue of people waiting to buy my book, to talk to me, to have their book signed. That's my vision.
Amazing.
And the queue isn't that long, to be honest. I'm quite modest. But there was a queue there. And that's why. And so you're thinking about all of that and then leaving that, saying goodbye, having a few selfies, getting into my car, which is driven by someone else.
Yep.
Yeah. And then as I set off, you know, that's pretty much where my vision ends. And that's when I open my eyes and I just go, that was awesome.
Yeah.
That, I really want that. I really, really want that. I get such a good feeling. I'm so happy about it. And I do that every single morning. So I get up at 5:30. So I'm thinking about that about, you know, before 6 o'clock in the morning.
So this
and
is that like, inspires me. Like a morning ritual.
Absolutely. Yeah. I have a Monday morning, a morning ritual that I do every single day. Very briefly, I get up, I read a book, a self-development book.
Sure. What are you reading at the minute?
I've just finished Atomic Habits. By James Clear. Oh, it's awesome.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's about setting, if you're struggling to keep going, set yourself habits all the time.
Mm.
And it goes into a lot more depth as to why those work and about habit stacking. So how you can attach. So if you want to do press-ups every morning, attach it to a habit that you've already got. So I guess you already clean your teeth. So before you clean your teeth, you do 10 press-ups, then you clean your teeth. And then at least you're doing 10 press-ups or maybe 20 press-ups
sure.
during the day. So you can do habit stacking, lots of things like that. So I read my book, then I get on the floor and I do some exercises, wakes me up, get the adrenaline pumping. Then I go into my yoga pose and I just do my visualization. So I think about what I want, what I really, really want. And it sounds like Spice Girls, that isn't it? What I really, really want. Nothing with Spice Girls.
Can you sing it?
Absolutely not. So I get my book, and in my book I got my words of affirmation. So this is a list of things that I say to myself which is very positive.
Sure.
Now, this kind of comes across as cringeworthy to other people. They're saying, oh, you know, bigging yourself up, are you? I think, yeah, I am. Because sometimes if you don't do it to yourself, who is going to do it?
Of course.
So I read the words and I read them out loud, not to the whole world, but just to myself. You know, Steve, you've got this. You are ingenious. You can achieve your goals. You will not lean on your excuses.
Amazing.
You will get everything. And I go through this. And then I put that to one side and I write down five things. Just five things that I will do that day that will take me closer to my goal, my vision that I've just been thinking about. Once I've done that, then I can get on with my day. Now, sometimes that takes me up to about 7 o'clock. That's when the kids wake up. I go and get them up. We have breakfast together, get them all ready. They go to school.
Sure.
That when I sat down at my desk again at like 8:30, 9 o'clock, you know, there's lots of things that distract you. The emails and the Facebook and social media, stuff that you've got to do. But I've got those five things. I can always refer back to those. I've got to get those five. If I want to achieve my goal, which I really do, I've got to do those five things. Those are the most important things. Now, if I get them done, at the end of the day, I've got no regrets. And my whole life is very much about living with no regrets. Sometimes I don't do that. Sometimes my head hits the pillow and I go, do you know what? I didn't get those things done because I got not distracted in a good way. Maybe I was spending more time with my kids or something that. I didn't get those five things done. Is that bad? Yeah, it is kind of bad. I regret it in a way, but it means I can pass them on to the next day. Now, other times I say, I didn't get those five things done, but no regrets.
Yes.
You know, I had a blast. I'm completely shattered. I couldn't have done any more today. Maybe I bit off too much more than I can chew. I'll pass them on.
Of course.
But it's about having that focus, that drive, and getting that drive is, again, making sure that your goal is correct. So make sure you've got the goal. And if you're struggling, if you're lapsing at any point or you're not motivated, then you've got to go back to your goal. And that's how vision is a great thing, but I'm a visual person, so I have my goal drawn out. You know, I draw a picture and I stick it on my vision board, so I see that, and that motivates me all the time. So it reminds me all the time about what I really want, and that's
amazing.
Important. And again, it's going to be something you want, not what your partner wants, or your parents or your boss wants, but what you want, what drives you. And this is a message I give to kids at schools. You know, what do you want to do? And they talk about their parents and stuff. What do you want to do? And it's funny because with primary school kids, they want to be a rock star and they want to be an Olympian. And I go, great, you can do that, whatever. As a teenager, they're a bit like, oh, I don't really know what I want. I say, well, okay, we start simple. You know, you want to be alive. You want to be happy. What makes you happy? I want to be a YouTuber. Okay, if you want to be a YouTuber, let's go with that. Yeah. Just find something that will drive them, because we all know that life's a journey and things change.
Don't you find it fascinating though, Steve, that, you know, as a child, if you said as a kid, let's say, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years old, maybe even as far as 10, if you turn around up until 10 and said, listen, I want to be a rock star, everyone would say, yes, you do it, I've got your back. Whereas if you were 30 and you're going to say, I want to be a rock star, everyone would say, you're insane.
Yeah.
You're an idiot. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Why is it that, like, what happens to us, do you think, that allows that transition to happen where it's acceptable, then it's not?
Yeah, I think it's... So you get drummed into that you've got to set your goals as being realistic and achievable.
Drums.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
I know, you're feeding this to me somehow, subconsciously. But yeah, it is. You're told that you've got to be more realistic and make it more achievable. And you can go through, and I think if you do that, that is fine. And your life will be fine. Your life will be okay. And I meet a lot of people and I say, how are things? And they say, it's fine.
Yes.
It's okay. It's and I go, well, that's lovely. Yeah. And it is okay. But I know what it's like to go above that. Mm. And that's what I want to do. That's part of my why, is I want to help people experience the happiness and fulfillment of achieving their true life goals.
Of course.
Not their okay goals, their fine goals. Yeah. What do you really want to do? And, you know, when I was in hospital, I didn't have aspirations of, you know, being a world champion or anything. I just want to get out of hospital. But the thing is that my goal then was to learn to stand again and to walk again. And I did, you know, I was told that I may never walk again. So to me, that's kind of a bit out of the zone. But I think sometimes a little bit of ignorance is good. A bit of la, 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 la. Because that can blind you of reality and just make you believe in other things that are, you know, that are possible if you go for it.
Yes.
And if you believe in it, if you really want it, you can work your way towards it.
Yeah.
As long as you're the best that you can be all the time. Because don't get me wrong, there are some things that you set out to do and you don't. And it's not about... So some people might see that as failure. And what I say is, I don't see that as failure, I see that as feedback.
Feedback.
Okay, that's a big message, because it's very hard, because sometimes you think, is this failure? It's got to be failure. No, it's feedback, Steve. Mm.
Yeah.
So you do that, you take it on board, you think, okay. The other thing is, you don't always get the results that you want. And I've done that throughout my life. I've said things. I guess I don't talk about those as much because they're negative or seen as negative. But kids, you know, going through the GCSEs or their exams or whatever, as long as they've done everything possible with the revising and all the work that they've done, the result was a result. A big message here, big story, was I used to get to start line when I was competing as a world champion. I'd get to the start line and we're just about to set off on the power triathlon, the swim, the bike, then the run. And I'd hear people saying, oh, I wish I'd done more swimming training. And I'd look at them and I'd think, really? More? You can't say that now. We're on the start line, it's too late. I was there. So my that's where I got the no regrets from. I said, I want to be on that start line with no regrets.
Brilliant.
I'm not saying that I'm the best swimmer or the best cyclist, the best runner, but I want to make sure that I say I've done as much swimming as I could have done with my technique and everything, and with the bike, and on the run, and in fact, on my nutrition, and on my wellness, and on my sleep,
everything. Yeah. The Daley Thompson approach.
Oh, is it?
I think that's what they used to say with Daley Thompson. He wasn't the best in any particular subject or event, but because he was so good at everything, he was the best.
That's me, yeah. People always ask me, what are you best at, swim, bike or run? I said, to be honest, I'm being honest, I'm not really good at any of them individually, especially with my disability, but you put them all together. And also, like I just said, it's more than that, it's the transition. The getting out of your wetsuit and getting onto the bike. It sounds quite easy, but I used to practice that in my garden.
Yes.
I used to put the wetsuit on. I used to run round and taking the wetsuit off, taking the goggles off, put my bike helmet on, touch the bike, stop the watch, and go, right, let's do that again.
Yes. Can I be faster? Can I do
it quicker? Yeah, can I do it? How can I? And sometimes I sit down and think, right, what can I do quicker? How can I make it quicker? And I used to, I got zips put into my wetsuit. I used to just practice loads because it's so important. You know, you can save maybe 10 seconds, 15, maybe sometimes 20 seconds. Now, that's quite a lot. Sometimes people spend hours and hours in the swimming pool to get 5 seconds quicker.
Yes.
Well, you can do it by running around the garden,
Sure.
So I think the other thing is you don't want to make any silly mistakes because that's really embarrassing and it's just, you know, and you'd have a regret. And people, it used to be a big topic after a triathlon was, how was your transition? Did your transition go okay? And I'd go, do you know what? I can't remember.
Right.
I can't remember. I whizzed through it so quickly. It was so natural that it was just like, it was brilliant.
Yes.
And I like that. Yes. So it's very important. It's the no regrets thing.
Brilliant. That's brilliant. So, I mean, just coming back to your morning rituals then for a second. So you were saying that you're writing down and you're giving yourself positive affirmations to yourself, like incantations.
Yep.
How long have you been doing that?
I reckon, I don't think I did that as an elite athlete. I think it's more of a ritual that I've got into since I became running my own business as a speaker. So I was suggested that I read the book Miracle Morning.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've read that.
Yep.
And I guess I've got it from that. And I've not completely copied that. And I don't think that's the right, I don't think you should copy other people's books, is that you take stuff on board and you do what you want to do. You take all these bits from lots of people's suggestions and stuff, and you do what you want to do.
Yeah.
And I think it's probably from that. The positive affirmations, and it made a lot of sense. It was funny, a lot of people talk about meditation. You should try meditation. I thought, do you know what? I'm going to look into this meditation because everyone's doing it, everyone's talking about it. So I read up on what meditation was, and I thought, oh, that's just like visualization. I've been doing that for years.
I've been doing that anyway.
I didn't know, it's just got a different name on it.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing, is that a lot of these things people do. Sometimes people say meditation is a little bit like when you're in the car and you're driving and you don't know how you've got there. Sure. You kind of zoned out, not in a bad way, but you were thinking about stuff. Well, you could class that as meditation in a way. Yeah. Or going out for a walk and letting your brain free.
Playing the piano,
all sorts of things like that. Somebody told me that, I said I got some really good ideas when I went for a run. And they said, wow, okay. They said, that's probably because of your alpha waves. I said, what do you mean?
Right.
When you're running, you get into rhythm and into a beat, and that's in tune with your alpha waves that help you make decisions. I didn't really know what they were talking about.
Sure.
All I know is that when I go for a run, it helps me to think about things.
Sure.
So you find your own way of doing things.
You find your own flow, don't you?
You do, yeah.
So you've been doing that for, what, about four and a half years?
Yeah, probably three years, I'd say.
Do you feel that you've made, like, has it changed the way you feel, the way you think, the things that you do? Have you noticed an impact from doing that?
Yes, yeah, definitely. It's hard to quantify it sometimes, but one, it's lovely to get into a morning routine. I think the morning is very precious and a lot of people don't use it or even abuse it.
Yeah.
So for me, that's my special time.
Sure.
It's so nice because everybody else, most people are still asleep, yes. And it's kind of like a secret time. You can like grab hold of it. So I do like that. So it's a really good fit. So it's a great way to start the day. To feel good about yourself, you know, why not? To give yourself words of affirmation, there's nothing wrong with that. It is a little bit cringeworthy and people go, oh, really, you do that? You know, you're big-headed. And you go, whatever, who cares? It works. Yes. So do it. The visualization, very important, just to reaffirm, what are you doing this all for? Especially when you're running your own business, you can get sucked into just doing it, because you've got to do it. You've got to think, why? Mm. Why am I doing all of this? Why am I working my fingers to the bone? So that's important. The exercise things, I think that just gets the adrenaline going. The self-promotion, self-development, the book is very important. But I think all of it, you know, doing the five things that you want to do that day or however many is important. Otherwise, you get distracted. And I think in this world, you can easily get distracted.
Very easy, yeah. And I think that's where I'll kind of lead into next is the five things that you said that you make a pledge to do every single day. Like what happens if them five things aren't directly linked to the financial side of your business? How do you determine where to apply your energy? If you've got, because obviously running a business, you need to make money. That's the whole purpose of a business, is to make money. So how do you determine whether or not you spend more time earning more money or spend that time working on the five things that's going to take you to the end goal?
That's true. So the five things are very much, they're almost like blue sky thinking. They literally come from the vision that you've done when you're in that happy place. For me, when I was on the stage getting the autographs done and everything, they're to take me towards that vision. But you're right, those ones don't necessarily take me towards doing my finances, to doing the social media updates, to doing the admin work, a little bit boring
all
stuff.
All the grunt things that need to be done.
You need to do those. And I spend most of my time in the day doing those. But if I just do that, I will never achieve my vision. I will just run a business and it will be fine. It will be okay.
So how do you then, because the natural human instinct will be to do the things that you enjoy doing the most.
Yes.
And avoid the finances and the admin and all that kind of stuff as well. So how do you give priority to the things that you need to do?
So I'm not very good at that. And so if you've read Eat That Frog.
Yep.
So that's saying that you should do the most important things to you, I guess, first. For me, the five, do those first.
Yes.
And I don't always do them first because I love doing them. They're the things that I really want to do. And they're kind of like saying, you should do me. And I'm going, I really need to do my finances and my admin and my invoices. So I don't know if that's right or wrong. I think it's a constant argument, listening to the voices in your head and getting the balance right. And sometimes I get it wrong. Because you're right, if I just did the five things all the time, the business wouldn't be a business. It would collapse at some point. You know, I have a business coach and he's really good. He structures me. He's always talking about systems and procedures. That's boring to me. But that's why I've got a business coach for the accountability to tell me to do those, because they are important. Otherwise, my business will never rise to the point where I achieve my vision. So how do I get it sorted out? I don't know, really. I think it is a case of kind of ignoring those five things until I go, right, I'm going to do some of these boring stuff first, the business stuff, and then I'm going to go and enjoy myself and do these like blue sky thinking stuff. Yeah.
Let's blue sky that low hanging fruit, shall we? So, I mean, it's fascinating. I mean, the routines, the rituals, and I think that the thing that it creates is the discipline.
Yes.
And it's the discipline that's really important. Like for you when you were training, for you to be disciplined to that kind of nth degree where it's like, do you know what, can I shave 3 seconds here and 5 seconds here? Yeah. And I think business is a lot like that.
Yeah.
In the sense that you've got to be looking at how can we refine it? Can we get better? If we make $5,000, can we do 10? Can we do 20? Can we do 50? How can we keep scaling and moving? And it's the discipline I find that allows you to do so. In terms of like your workshops, you've got down Reaching Your Gold workshops, which is actually very, very, what I'm trying to say, I suppose the title's perfect, isn't it?
For
what it's all about. So tell us a little bit about Reaching Your Gold.
So Reaching Your Gold is something I talk about in my presentations. I ask people to think about what their vision is, their dream is, and I say, for me, you know, it was my gold. I wanted to get the gold medal. I talk about the gold, you know, crossing the finish line, grabbing the gold, and then I say, what's your gold? What's that thing that you really want? So that's why I use the word gold. And I don't mean gold as in what it's worth in money, or as in a gold medal, as in what's that big, shiny, amazing thing that you really want. And the workshop. So what I was realizing that I was doing was with my presentations, I was inspiring and I was motivating people. That was great. And then they were walking out the door and that's it. And I wanted to help them. How do I actually help them? I thought, well, I struggle to do that in 45 minutes when I'm on the stage. Even if I did a quick workshop, I'd struggle. I need more than that. I need a whole day. So the whole day is great. I have a workshop. I obviously do my keynote initially to get a bit of respect, so they know who I am, they know what I've achieved. And then I say, right, let's over to you. Like I asked you right at the beginning, what is your goal? And some people don't know. So we said, that's where we do drawing the pictures and we get a vision of what it is. And that's really good because it suddenly, they're opening more to their subconscious. You know, they're drawing a picture of them happy, who's around them, what are they doing, put a bit of color to it, put some times and dates on it, put some meat to the bones. And once they've got that, their vision, their goal, then I can give them more tools on to achieve that. I know what to do. I've achieved from growing my leg back, from walking again, from standing again, to becoming a world champion, now becoming an author. I know how to do it. So it's about giving the tools that I've got and the stories that I've got, giving them to these people in the workshops so that they can take them on board. I guess not everything, because sometimes you get information overload, but people just, you can see the light bulb flick sometimes and they write something down. They go, yes, I'm going to do that. When I get home, I'm going to do that. Yeah, and then I feel like I'm actually helping them.
You're making an impact on
them. Yeah, that's what I want to do. That's my why.
So the kind of framework that you use for them to set the goals, is there a specific framework? Is there, like, if you do this and then do that and then do that? Is that
pretty much, yeah. It's something that I'm developing. It's like I'm wanting to find a formula. It's very much about getting the vision first and then kind of using the SMART, I know, making sure you've got all of that, but going further than achievable and realistic. And then just making sure that they benchmark. I feel that benchmarking is very, it's not always talked about, it's a bit underrated, but I think benchmarking is very important. Once you've got a goal, for crying out loud, benchmark is, if you want to be rich, how much money have you got now? Just write down how much money you've got in your bank account. If you want to lose weight, okay, how much do you weigh now? Write that down. If you want to become fitter, faster, if you want to grow your business, you know, where are you now? And the reason you do that, for me, is because when motivation does struggle, when you are like, oh, I don't know if I can be bothered anymore, you can look back and you can go, oh my gosh, look how far I have come. You know, in this time last year, 2 years ago, I was there, and now I have moved forward. And that gives you a big boost, because again, sometimes other people won't give you that. You feel that you're going nowhere, and you're not. You are going somewhere, and you need to see that all the time. When I was doing physio, I used to have charts all the time. I had to get my leg straight once, and I couldn't get it straight. And the first thing I did was, as an engineer, was I bought this measuring device so I could measure the angle of my leg and I could see how bad it was. And after physio, I'd measure it and I'd write down this tally. And I remember going to my physio and she said, how are you getting on with your leg straightening? I said, oh, I'll show you. I've got a graph. Look at that. And yeah, you could see my progress. Really? And the thing, she was impressed by it. It wasn't about her though, it was about me, it was my leg. I was doing it for myself.
Of course.
Now, the end of that story wasn't very, very good, and I needed to ask for help. That's very hard. But I could see how much time and effort I was putting into it.
And you said you were benchmarking all
exactly.
the way.
Exactly, benchmarking all the way. When I was walking around Rother Valley, I felt gutted that I couldn't walk all the way around on crutches, and I'd be in tears. But eventually I would get to the next place, the next bench, in fact, and you know, I'd say, well, I'm getting there. Mm-hmm. As an athlete, of course you benchmark all the time with your swim, your bike and your run, and now in my business. You know, I'm not necessarily looking at how much money I'm making. I have to take that into a factor because it's a business, I need to survive. But I have a tally chart on my Excel spreadsheet that says how many people were in the audience.
Right, yeah.
So I can see how many people I've inspired and motivated. Sure. And as I see that figure go up and up, I'm just like, wow, that's cool. Yeah. That's really good. So it depends how you benchmark. And I guess with my book coming out, it will be how many books have I sold? Sure. It's a clear thing. I started on zero. How many have sold now, next month, next time?
And build from there.
Benchmark is so important, and some people don't always realise that.
And I suppose that ties into your personality type as well. If you're naturally quite analytical, it'll come quite easier. But if you're a go-getter, the leader, the entrepreneurial type, then the analytics is going to be quite challenging at times. So,
It's
understanding yourself, your own inner strengths, isn't it, and weaknesses.
I think it's very interesting knowing about yourself, whether you do DISC analysis or you do some of the other things that are out there. And I love all of that. I don't know it, and I've had it done on me.
Yes.
And I always think I really should look into this more because I find it so fascinating. But I think what I've realised as well is that, one, I'm not a planner. I hate planning. So my business coach keeps saying, you know, your 5-year plan, where is it? I've drawn a picture.
He's like, I've got a vision board.
Yeah, I've got a vision board. He says, you need to do more than that, Steve. Okay. So I also, I realised, because I was reading the book that I was reading, Atomic Habits, it talks about instant gratification and long-term gratification. Right. And it goes into depth. To basically explain that, I'm instant gratification. I get very impatient. I want things now. So a good example of that is some people that wants to get rich, they're very tempted to go and buy lottery tickets. Ooh, instant gratification. Now, as we know, that doesn't work. Okay, so you've got to use a bit of common sense in it as well. And you've got to go for the long term. So I really wanted to write my book and I wanted it done as soon as possible. It took me a year to write and a year and a half, and a half a year to actually get out. That's a long time. If I'd known that at the start, I might have never done it.
Sure.
Because I want that instant gratification. What I did, because I was impatient, I reset my alarm clock in the morning. I was getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning to do my typing. I want this damn book done. Right. How do I get it done? I'm impatient. So I use my instant gratification feelings to push myself in my sport. As when I was doing my physio and everything like that, I wanted my leg straight. I wanted it, you know, I wanted the bone grow. And they said, you know, well, you've got to stand in it and walk in it. Right. I will do that. I'm off. Yeah. And the pain that I went through, but I wanted that damn leg grown.
Yes.
So my impatience is what I use to push myself. And so I don't think that's a bad thing. However, I am a little bit jealous of the people that got long-term gratification. And they say, oh, that'll be fine. I'm going to go on a course. I'm going to study. Yeah. I'm going to do some research. I'm going to read the instructions. I don't read instructions.
Well, man.
Yeah, just get on with it. Yeah. So, you know, there's pros and there's cons and pros, but it depends. Once you know what kind of person you are, then you can use that to your advantage.
Sure.
That's what I've
done. So like with things like that then, so everything that you've just talked about really, the commitment to seeing it through.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I think excellence really is. I think it's a commitment to completion.
Yeah.
I think that's what excellence is about. But how do you keep yourself motivated? Or how did you keep yourself inspired and motivated to do it again the next day, and then do it again the next day, and then for a year to write a book? Do you know, like, because there must have been many times it's like, I can't be bothered, I want to quote, it's not for me this, I'm going to leave it alone. How did you pull through that and think, do you know what, I don't feel like, I don't want to do it now, but I'm going to do it anyway?
Yeah, I think one is the benchmarking, so you can see how far you've come, and it's very important for me to celebrate. Every time I did a chapter,
right,
like, I've done it. I've done that chapter. That was a nightmare.
So how did you celebrate?
Usually sparkling, you know, champagne. It doesn't have to be champagne, as long as it's sparkling. Yeah. It doesn't matter about the label.
Just sparkling water.
Or some trashy food, or something like that. Celebrating with my girlfriend. Just something just to say I did it. A pattern like something physical. Again, some people don't do that. They don't give themselves words of affirmation. They don't give themselves a celebration or well done, Steve.
Sure.
So doing that was very important. But also to stay motivated, it's very much about believing in yourself, I think. And just, you know, again, telling yourself, wow, look at what you're doing, look at what you have done. You know, and it is hard work and it is taking ages. And, you know, I think we're all guilty of this, is that we all set our goals too unbelievable in the short term. And then we're not big enough thinkers in the long term.
Sure.
So what do you want to do in 10 years' time? You kind of hold it back a little bit. 10 years is a long time. You could achieve a lot in 10 years. Whereas if you say, what do you want to achieve in 3 months? Oh, I want to achieve loads. In 3 months, I want this, that, and the other. And you know, you probably don't achieve that.
Of course.
It's not failure, it's feedback. But you think, okay, maybe I should just bring it down a little bit.
True.
So I would set my goals too high. I want to get this chapter done in 2 weeks. You know, I reckon I can do that.
Right.
3 weeks pass, I'm like, I haven't done it yet.
I haven't done it yet.
How do I keep going? I guess it's because I'm persistent.
Right.
Because it kind of gets me a little bit angry, impatient. And I go, right, what more can I do? And it says it in my book a lot, is this phrase of what more can I do? What more can I do? What more can I do?
Mm.
And asking myself the question on that, of how can I get this chapter written then? I need to give myself more time. And this brings us onto a different tool. It's about having how much time you've got in your day. And I talk about this as like a bookshelf. You've got 24 hours in the day, 24 inches, and you can only put so many books on that shelf. If you want to spend more time on one book or have a bigger book, if you've got a big book like me writing a book, you can't fit that onto the shelf without taking some books off. You've got to take some books off. You can't squeeze it on. You've only got 24 hours in the day. You need to sleep, you need to eat, you need to work. So what are you going to take off? you've got to take off the book of social media. You've got to take the book off of television.
Sure.
You've got to take the book off of spending time with your friends.
Sure.
Because you have got a big goal, a big commitment that you really want to do. And that will make you really happy. That is your goals. That is your vision, your dream, your everything. And I guess you could call it consequences. There are consequences with the books that you take off.
Of
you've got to make that decision. Do not think that you can squeeze it all in and do it all. Because you're gonna break something.
Of course.
And that's
course.
The thing.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah.
So prior to this, I'm going back a bit, let's go back a few years now. So you was a health and safety manager, project management for construction.
Yep.
For almost 10 years.
Yeah, I know.
10 years. So what I mean, like, let's go back a bit before that. I mean, that's back to 2004.
Yeah.
Which is what, 15 years ago?
Yeah.
So, I mean, what happened before that? I mean, where was Steve prior 15 years ago?
I've done so much. So when I left school, I worked down the coal pits of Yorkshire. So I was a maintenance fitter, mechanical engineer. I used to build up the big mining machines, made sure they worked. If it worked, great. Split it up, put it down the mine shaft, build it up again. If it worked, great. Then I got the hell out of there because it was dirty, dusty. I didn't like the conditions. If that machine broke down, I'd be the one that get the call.
Sure.
I'd go down the pit. I'd get it working again. Now, I don't know what those guys did to those machines. They were a wreck and I had to repair it. The thing was, straight away, I couldn't lean on excuses. I couldn't say, oh, I can't do it. We're at the coal face. They're kind of waiting. You know, they're waiting
so
for the time.
On you.
Yeah. Yes. I had to be ingenious on getting that machine going. I had to rob parts from other broken down machines to get my machine up and running. Once I did it, you know, bodged it, whatever, then I got the hell out of there and that's it. So I was an engineer at heart and I did that and I loved the job. Got made redundant. Made advantage of that, went travelling around the world, worked my way around, working in the field, picking fruit, working in a bar, did that for 9 months, came back, worked in a laboratory, inspecting and testing, things like that. That's when I had the car accident in 2002. So when I got back into work, I just wanted to take on anything.
Sure. So just to stop there for a second. So 2002, you was in a lab, a laboratory, doing testing, and that's when the car...
That's when I had my white lab coat on and everything like that. So again, a very different job to working down the pit.
Yeah, of course. So I mean, tell us a little bit about the car accident, because this is the thing that really kind of, I suppose, gave the motivation for everything that you are today.
Yeah, I guess, because a lot of people ask me, have I always been like this? I think it's quite a common question. Have I always been so driven? And I think I've always been driven, but not to this level.
Sure.
And I think when you have a life-changing event that affects you, it kind of makes you look at life a little bit differently, and you suddenly think, I've got one life, let's live it.
Yeah.
All the stuff that I've done in the past, because I loved running and I'd set myself goals and that. Prior to the accident.
Sure. So the accident. So you, what happened? I mean, was it?
So driving down the road on the outskirts of Sheffield, there's a bit of rain on the road. Made it a bit slippy. I lost control.
Right. Speeding?
No, not speed. No, because I got that checked out. Yeah.
Sure.
So there's nobody else in the road, nobody else in the car, and I wasn't speeding. And that's important. That comes later because, you know, when I wanted to drive again, I had the confidence that I was a good driver.
This is why I was just asking it then to see if it was something that was human error, how badly would that have affected you when you come to get behind the wheel again? But
very much answered. But I think more than that, it helps me with me standing on a stage. So there's lots of speakers out there, and there's some speakers that say, look, I was young, I was an idiot, I was drunk, and I was driving, and then I trashed my legs, and I'm in a wheelchair.
And it wasn't any of that.
Yeah. Some people struggle to feel sorry for that person because they kind of think, well, is that not karma? Or you got what you deserved? It sounds horrible. I haven't got any of that.
Sure.
Mine was an accident, skidded on the wet road, took me off the road, bent the car in half, and it, you know, crushed both my legs.
Yeah.
And when I came round... You know, I had lots of people helping me, the paramedics, the police, the ambulance, the fire brigade. Literally took them an hour to cut the car apart and drag me out of the car along with my legs and take me all the way into the Northern General Hospital in Sheffield to save my life and save my legs. And
was your life in, like, did you get critical in your life?
Yeah,
situation?
I don't always... I mean, I was on a lot of morphine and a lot of drugs then, but I, writing my book, I've had to take myself back into that moment, and I can't remember it, but the notes are there. So my mum made some notes about taking me in, and they were trying to save my legs, but they also said to her, listen, you know, we're going to try and save your son's life as well, because it's critical. He might not come out of this, not necessarily because of the amount of blood that he's lost. We can pump that back in, but it's his will to live. The thing is, he's gone into so much shock, he might not be able to pull himself through this. Now, I didn't know that. I was very ignorant, thank goodness, because I know as a first aider, I know that if you go into shock, that can kill you because your body shuts down. It saves parts of your body. It closes down other parts. It tries to help itself, but it doesn't always do a good job. Mm. I was ignorant. I was like, yeah, go and save my legs. Great. You've got this. I trust you. And off they went. So I had a very positive mindset. It's funny, my blood type is B positive. So who'd have thought? So I know that was nearly the title of my book, B positive.
I'm gonna say that's book too short.
I know, it must be, yeah, B positive.
Yeah, B positive.
So my blood type, so when I came round, I was like, yeah, you know, you saved my legs, that's great. But look at them. They're trashed, you know, and that's what he said. Yeah, we did save your legs and your life, but you still may never walk again. You've got a long way to go. You've got a long journey.
So how long was you in the hospital?
Oh, too long. I think anybody who's been in hospital, it's too long. I was only in there for 4.5 weeks. Now that, to me at the moment, was a long time. But there's other people that were in there for months and months. Yeah. I just wanted to get the hell out of there, which I did. That was my goal. My first goal was to get out of the hospital. How do I do that? Eat food, get energy, rest, recover, keep positive, keep thinking, keep doing the physio. Yes. And there's a really nice bit in my book, which I've just read on the social media, about I was lying in bed and I realised that my arms were going to be very critical for me in the wheelchair, on crutches. And I looked above me and there's this thing for to hang grips on, and it's like a bar, and I could just about reach it. So I managed to reach it and pulled myself up. And I started doing chin-ups, yeah, like a Rocky movie.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this is like a week after my accident, but I was already thinking, how do I get out of this hospital? I've got to keep fit, got to keep healthy.
Though.
Yeah, well, I think it's the goal. Yeah. You know, what did I want most? To survive and get out of hospital.
Sure.
If it was a nice, cozy hospital and I was quite happy and the food was nice, I'd be like, oh, I'm all right, I'll just stay here.
I'll stay here for a while,
no work and everything. Course, yeah. No, it was horrible. I wanted to get home. I wanted to start getting better. I wanted to take it to the next stage. When I got my, you know, when I got handed my wheelchair, I said, thank you, I want crutches. When I got two crutches, I said, great, I want to give one back. When I got one crutch, I said, I don't want this. I want to be walking with no crutches. I was always thinking about the next stage, but I wasn't thinking it too far ahead of myself. I was keeping it real, I guess.
Right, yeah, cool. So the entire journey to recovery, how long did it take in total for you to be able to walk unassisted?
Yeah, it's hard to say because there's highs, there's lows. So I got the wheelchair, so I was walking, which was great, but then I had to get my legs straight, so I was back into the wheelchair. So I'd say generally it's probably about a year and a half to 2 years.
Right, yeah.
All I can say is that my accident was in 2002. In 2004, nearly 2 years after, I was competing in a triathlon.
Right.
Just doing the swim section, just doing a mile swim in the River Thames, London Triathlon, and having to run through a transition with no crutches. So 2 years later, I was doing something. Just the swim, because I couldn't cycle then. There's no way I could run then. Mm. I was thinking about what I could do rather than what I couldn't do.
Mm.
But I wanted to do something. I needed to do something. I had this thing in my head that I wanted to prove to myself that the accident hadn't had a detrimental effect on my life. You know, yes, it had changed my life, but it hadn't ruined. Again, a very critical thing that I said to myself in hospital. Nobody told me these words, but I never said that the accident had ruined my life. It's just changed it. Just put it on a different course. And that's as positive as I could be, really. The other things I used to ask myself, why all the time? I just could not work out why that had happened to me, and I still don't. And I wish it had never happened. You know, I did this triathlon with the kids yesterday. They did the triathlon I was supporting. My ankle was killing me. I have a lot of pain in my ankle. This morning, it was still hurting. I'm thinking, God, I'm sick of this. You know, it's never going to go. It's always going to be there. I've just got to get on with it.
Of course.
You know, just do what I can do.
Of course. Throughout this 2 year period of, like, at what stage into that did you think, you know what, I want to try and win some gold medals?
None of that, not in the 2 year period. I just wanted to get better. So my goal was very much, I want to get back to normal.
Yeah.
I was sick and tired of having a cage on my leg, being in a wheelchair, crutches. I was sick and tired of people holding the door open for me, asking me, are you okay, Steve?
Right.
Or how's the leg going? Yeah, same as when you last asked and everything like that. I just wanted to blend into society. I wanted to get a job and everything like that. After 2 years, a year and a half, 2 years, the cage came off. I was standing, walking, I was wearing trousers again. I suddenly realised that my goal that I'd been going for, of being normal again, it didn't exist. you know, that thing that I've been driving, my goals that I've been working towards didn't exist. I realised I was very different to what I was before the accident.
Sure.
You know, with both my legs, my left leg got lack of feeling, lack of movement, nerve pain. My right leg, lack of movement, loads of pain. You know, much like I could stand and walk, I couldn't run. And I suddenly realised that there's no such thing as normal. There's no such thing as normal. People are always saying this word normal, and kids use it a lot. And at that point, I started not comparing myself to other people, to my friends, to my family, to my colleagues, to celebrities. I stopped doing that. I started thinking about who I was and what I could do rather than what I couldn't do. What could I do with these trash legs?
Right.
I couldn't run, but I could swim.
Sure.
So I swam. That's why I did the triathlon, the relay triathlon. Eventually, I did get onto a bike and I set myself goals, my own personal goals. And I did that. And then it's just a natural progression of looking for goals all the time, pushing myself out of my comfort zone, thinking about more physical things that I could do, which takes us up to maybe 2009, which is when I found my first power triathlon.
Really?
Yeah.
And that was the first gold?
Yeah, that's the first gold. I was just looking for a triathlon and I scrolled down. There's this thing called Power Triathlon, triathlon for disabled people. I thought, I wonder, with my disability, I wonder if I can enter that. They said I could compete as a disabled athlete. And I was like, yes, I'm disabled. This is great. Because this opened doors for me. This means I could compete with them. And I went down there and they said, can you run? And I said, no, not yet. But now I've got a goal. Yeah, I will. Because I could see the competitiveness
of
me.
Not yet, but I can.
I've got something to go for now. I'm doing swimming events, cycling events. Now I'm doing this triathlon with a running section in it. I'm going to see if I can run. And I hadn't run for 7.5 years, but now I had that thing inside me, that excitement, that, you know, that
obsession.
Nervousness. Obsession.
Yeah.
I like to call it dedication and commitment. Yeah. My ex-wife used to call it obsession, but I don't call it that. So yes, I had this thing that I really wanted, and that's what I was driving towards. And going down there, meeting the other power triathletes from around the UK, they had missing arms, missing legs, visually impaired, completely blind. Mm-hmm. They were doing a triathlon, power triathlon, amazing people. And my training had been very much, so if I went for a run with my injured legs, I'd have so much pain the next day that I couldn't run. So the next day I wouldn't run, and the next day I'd swim, because I could swim. The day after that, I'd cycle, and the day after that, the pain had gone, so I'd run again. And that was my training.
Yeah. So then not happy winning one gold medal, you decided, let's do it all again.
Very much so, but that's down to, my goal was to finish that triathlon, celebrate with a few beers, enough, think about the next goal.
Yeah.
I finished that, I won. In my category, I became British champion that day. I got the gold medal, it was amazing. But more than that, I had an official came over to me and said, Steve, you know, you've won, what's next? I said, well, I'm going home. He says, but you're a British champion. Would you like to represent Great Britain?
Yeah.
And I'm like, hell yeah.
Of course, yes.
I would love to do that. He says, well, we have lots of power triathlon events throughout the year. You could also enter the European Championships. You could even think about, I don't know, the World Championships at some point. Mm. And this put all sorts of ideas into my head. I was just going to go home and chill out. And now I'm thinking, yeah, I could do that. It's opportunities. It's about knowing what your vision is and about seizing the opportunities. Opportunities are around us all the time.
Yes.
You've got to see them, hear them. Mm. You've got to smell them. And when you do, you've got to grab hold of them with both hands and do something about it. And that's what I was going to do.
Brilliant.
And I came home and I reset my alarm for 5:30 in the morning. This is me. I had a new vision that I wanted to be British champion again. I wanted to be European champion. Maybe at some point in the future, I wanted to be world champion. So I drew a picture. And I drew a picture of me crossing the finish line as a world champion and I stuck that on my wall. And that's what I worked towards over the next couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then, like, now, so we will come back to this moment now, like, motivational speaker, international.
Yes.
Motivational. I mean, like, what made you think, actually, I want to go and inspire people and motivate people to get their gold?
Yeah.
What made that happen?
So I did that. I did a few schools, and a few people asked me, they said, could you come and talk to us, our group? And I said, yeah, of course I will. And I did it, and I loved it, and they loved it, and I loved it that they loved it. And there's a lot of happiness going on there. And I just carried on doing that. I was still doing my health and safety work in the construction company. But then I got made redundant, which is bad. It's bad for anybody. But I'm very much about making things into a positive, turning adversity into golden opportunities. I managed to get another job, part-time job, with the Scout Association. That lasted for 3 years. That was amazing. Working from home, part-time, and after 3 years, that finished. And people said, Steve, what are you going to do next? You know, you've got no job. And I said, well, you know, I've been doing a bit of speaking and I love it. And I get this burning desire inside me. I said, I'm going to be a motivational speaker. And they're like, wow, Steve, that's awesome. How are you going to do that? And I'm like, I haven't a clue, but I'm going to do it. Because if you really want something, if you've got something that you're passionate about, you'll find a way. And you start putting feelers out. The first thing, anybody who wants to be a motivational speaker or speaker, first thing I say for them to do is tell people. Mm. Get a business card that says, I am a speaker. Yeah. Because if you don't tell anybody, nobody's going to book you. So that's what I started doing. I started telling everybody that I've got a great story and I can speak about it. I managed to get onto a TEDx in Sheffield. That was great. At the time, I was the best that I could be at the time. When I look back at it now, I can see how I've improved a lot since then. I joined this thing called the PSA, Professional Speakers Association. You go into a room there, and you know they meet all over the UK. There's a room full of people that are making a living out of speaking. Mm. I'm like, wow, I want to be like these guys. Yes. These guys are doing it. You talk to them, you mingle with them, you get that in the mindset, and you start believing in yourself, think, I can do this. And they said to me on my first day there, they said, Steve, you know, if you do join the PSA, there's a membership fee. But also, if you join, in your first year, you can enter a competition. I said, a competition? Yeah. Tell me more. I'm quite competitive, me. So they said, well, it's a speaker competition. I said, I get that. They said, it's 5 minutes in front of an audience and you get judged. I went, oh, that sounds terrible. Sign me up. Yeah, I'm on it. Right, 5 minutes talking. And I entered the competition and I didn't do particularly well initially. And I didn't see that as failure. I saw that as feedback. I got so much input from the PSA members who helped me get better and better and better. And I got through the ranks and I got onto the final stage. And in my first year, I did so well. I learned so much. And that's taken me onwards. And now I've been voted a Yorkshire Speaker of the Year by the PSA 2017, 2018. I've got aspirations of becoming president at some point in the PSA. I love it, but
so
more
you're
than
very
that,
much still involved with the PSA.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? It's once a week. Once a month. Yorkshire, they meet up in Leeds, but every region's got their own one. And what I like doing is one, going to listen to the speakers there, sure. Meeting the other people, but also helping. Mm. I love going there, and I can see people how I was 2 years ago as they come in, a bit wet behind the ears and a bit nervous, and I go and say hello to them and say, right, what are you doing at the moment? Can I help you at all? And my time is limited, but I can give them positivity, if anything, because it's not easy. Statistically, I think only about 2% of people that want to become a speaker actually succeed. Right. And when we're talking about a professional speaker, they don't do anything else. They've got no consultancy business or anything like that. They just speak. Yeah. Only 2% make it. Really? And I'm one of them just-ish at the moment. I'm still new to it at the moment. But I've got aspirations of staying with it.
Brilliant.
And the way I look at it is, I like swimming. When I'm swimming, say I was in the middle of the ocean and I'm heading towards land, the only way I'm going to get to that land is to keep swimming. It's the same with your business, same with your job. You've got to keep on swimming. You've got to keep on working. Now, I could hold onto a life raft, which is nice and safe while I'm trying to get to land. But if I'm holding onto a life raft, I'm never going to get to where I want to be, to the goal. So I haven't got a part-time job.
Sure.
All I've got is this business, this speaking business.
Sure. I've
got
to make it work. You're speaking a lot as well, aren't you? You're in different parts of England all the time, aren't you?
Yeah, around
the UK, but not all them gigs are paid, are they, though? I mean, they're still...
It's always difficult, yeah.
I mean, like, I think that the ratio that I found was something like 80 to 20, being 20% paid, 80% were for free.
Yeah, it's really hard. I think it's the same with kind of like the art industry, as a musician or an artist, as a speaker. People don't always see the value and why you should get paid just for speaking until they book someone who isn't very good at speaking, who's not a professional speaker, and they go, "Oh my goodness, we'll get a professional." Yeah, you get what you pay for. I think that's the thing, I don't want to put anybody down, but I do feel that there is a difference now between being a speaker and a professional speaker. And I'm a professional speaker. And when I talk to people on the phone about booking me and stuff, I even say what level of speaker.
Of
do you want a level 4, level 3, level 2, level 1? I'm a level 3.
Right.
I know some level 1s. If you want to put in touch with them, they're a lot cheaper than me, but I'm a level 3. Right. Level 4s, they're usually down in London. They cost you an awful lot.
Yeah.
I'm a level 3.
Right.
There is no level.
Level 4's the highest, is it?
Yeah, this is kind of made up. But this is to give the person the other end of the phone some kind of inclination of what...
What benchmark. We charge.
Yeah, benchmark. Yeah. Benchmark again. Because otherwise, there is no certificate.
Sure.
Anybody can call themselves the speaker. But when you're on that stage, are you getting interaction? Are you getting a message across? Are you telling a story? Are you keeping contact? There's a massive there's art to it. Yeah, there is. And I now say that I do a performance rather than I just talk. Sure. It's a performance. I use the stage, I use props, I use interaction. It's fun. That's why I love it so much. It's great.
So where are you finding the work from then? Are they coming to you now? Have you built enough profile for people to be coming to you, or are you actively hunting?
Oh, always actively hunting. Yes. That my mastermind group told me that I need to do more hunting.
More hunting.
So I'm going to call it Tracking Tuesday. Tracking Tuesday is hunting Tuesday, it down. Yeah. So Monday, Motivational Monday, I remind myself of my big goals, my family goals, my long-term goals. Tuesday is Tracking Tuesday, where I track and hunt. Wednesday is Wednesday Wellness. I realised last year I wasn't getting enough wellness. I was just working, doing my book. So on Wednesday, I drag myself out and go and get some fresh air. I do that other days, but I must do it on a Wednesday. Thursday is Thoughtful Thursday, so I always want to help people, new speakers, and I always find that with karma that if you help people, they give back. Thursday, Thoughtful Thursday, and Friday is Finance Friday. I hate finance. I have to tell myself to do finance.
Not Feel Good Friday.
No. Yeah. Feel Good every day. No, it's Finance Friday. I've got to do my invoices and my paperwork and stuff like that. So where do I find them? It's putting the feelers out. Yes, It was a moment last week when I was really ill and I was in bed and I just had a power nap and I reached my phone and on the phone was somebody wanting to book me for a gig. And I went, yes, I've done it. I'm in bed and people are like wanting to book me. Sorted. Now, I'd done a lot of work before that. Yeah, I made it. Yeah, that's me done. I can retire now. Yeah. Now, I'd done a lot of work before that and it was kind of the end result.
Yes.
But it's nice. It is so nice when people contact you saying, we'd like to book you, we'd like to pay you at the fee that you're asking. Sure. They're not trying to haggle you down. But yes, I'm still doing gigs when there's opportunities. Mm-hmm. Also, almost call it a showcase, when I get the opportunity to share my story to others, because I know that there's certain people in the audience where things could happen. Difficulty with that is things like schools and universities. The students aren't going to book me for another gig. The school might do, you don't know, or there might be a teacher's convention or something, but it's pretty much them in that room. So there's not much more opportunity to go further. However, sometimes there is. Sometimes they recommend me to their teacher friends or other schools and stuff like that.
So it kind of just starts to spread.
Yeah, and that's really nice. And I always do my unique thing of, before I do a talk, I always do a video saying, hi, I'm Steve Judge. I'm really looking forward to coming to your school. Just about like a minute, just like hype it up, send it off to them. And they go like, wow, this is great. And they put it on their social media. And so that really helps my publicity and it really helps them to know what they're getting as well.
And it's just giving extra value, isn't it? It's just giving
extra value. How can you give extra value? That's always the big question in business. What more are you giving?
Yeah, totally. So let's have a look at the book then, Steve. So you've got the book, haven't you?
So yes.
Don't lean on your excuses.
Yeah.
Can't read that for me. I'm
so it says, there. A world champion's courageous story that inspires living with no regrets. Marvelous. So we did a long quiz or questions about what the title could be and came up with 126 possibilities. And eventually this one just seemed the best one. And this is what I bang on about all the time. This is what I talk about in my talk about me in hospital, through my physio, me as an elite athlete, and now me in my business about not leading. We've all got excuses.
And I mean, this is a phrase I imagine that you've always said, because when you came out of school, that's one of the things that you said right at the start, isn't it? Is don't lean on your excuses, Steve. Take the parts from these machines here and fix this machine there.
Yeah. I think as an engineer, you're very much taught to be ingenious and not lean on excuses and think about things like that. I used my engineering capabilities when I was going through physio, when they told me that I couldn't do something, I couldn't use an exercise bike, and I made a wooden pedal so that I could get on that exercise bike and I could better myself in physio.
Oh, yeah.
It was very tempting to lean on excuses. And those come in all forms. People give you excuses. People say, you can't do that. Mm. Oh, okay. Oh, I'll not do it then. Boom, that's an excuse. You've got to question it. Why can't I do it? Why do you think I can't do that?
Yeah.
Now, they might be right, and sometimes you might spend a lot of time finding the result that they said in the first place.
Tried.
Exactly. And that's the thing. It's the no regrets. Living life with no regrets is a big thing. Every time your head hits the pillow, you've got to ask yourself, good day today? Any regrets? No, it's been okay. Good stuff. If you've got some regrets, then okay, let's bang on.
Let's get back out of bed.
Yeah. Keep going. This is my book. It's taking a long time to write.
This is a big book as well.
Yeah, it is.
How many pages is this?
Pages, it's 334. Yeah. Words is about 99,000.
99,000
yeah,
words.
Yeah, so it's a lot.
That's incredible.
And that's why I wanted to do self-publish. I mean, I've gone with Libretas, who are my the independent publishers. But if I'd gone for traditional publishers, then they'd have the book, the responsibility. They could tell me what to do. Sure. They'd say, take this out. Chop it out.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, this is my
this
book.
This is mine, yeah.
This is mine. It's taking me a long time. And that's the reason. And I know maybe it is too big, but I'm happy. I've got no regrets. The next Perfect. Book, whatever, maybe I'll give it to some traditional publisher and they can do what they want. But this, to me, was my little baby that I wanted.
So 100,000 words. Yeah. Inspiring people to live a life with no excuses and no regrets.
Absolutely. Incredible.
So this is available right now, is it?
Yeah, so it's available now on Amazon. If you just type in Don't Lean on Your Excuses or even just type in Steve Judge, you'll come up with this book. You can get it on Kindle and you can get it on paperback, obviously. The Kindle, I think at the moment, there's a special offer. So it's usually about $7.99 and it's on sale for $2.99 or something.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. So grab the opportunity while you can.
Is there an audio version in the making?
So many people ask me and I so want to do an audio version. So I haven't got the time or money at the moment. No excuses. It's a fact. But once I get this out and it's selling well, I'm dying to go down to the studio. It's going to take a week. You read your book, but I'll be able to put emphasis in it. I'll be able to put my smile, I'll be able to put anger, frustration, all of that into the book. And I really want to do it. Whether or not people buy it, I don't really care. I just want to do it. So it will be coming. Maybe it might be a next year project or something. Definitely an audio.
Fantastic.
And a lot of people have asked for it as well. And I listen to audio.
Yes.
Because when I'm driving...
It's just easy, isn't it?
Yeah, my radio broke about 2 years ago and I've never got it fixed. Which is great. I use that time for thinking. I use that time to listen to audiobooks. So that's a good way.
Amazing.
So I get rid of the excuse. It's like in this house, we've got no television. I find that television is an excuse to watch it. So
it's pollution.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. So get rid of those excuses, whatever way. I don't buy biscuits because I love biscuits. So we've got no biscuits.
Remove temptation.
Yeah, exactly. They're in the shop down the road. If I want biscuits, I can go.
You've got to go get them.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's about how you do things and know your weaknesses as well. I think that's the thing.
Very, very good. Well, we'll put a link to that in the description as well, so they can come and take a look at that. If anybody wants to find out more about you, Steve, maybe even hire you for speaking at their
Absolutely.
Events, where can people find out more about you?
So my website, it's a new website that I've got out, but it's www.steve-judge.co.uk.
Amazing.
That's the best way. Social media, though, you know, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn, everywhere.
Total omnipresent.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That's what you're going to do. And you've got to be careful not to get sucked into it. But yes, I'm very, very strong out there, so people can find me.
Amazing. Steve, listen, do you know what? We could keep on going.
I know
I'm sure we could do another 3 hours. Doing
next
it.
Time.
Next time for sure. Steve, thank you so much for your time. Really, really appreciate it.
No, thank you. No problem at all.
There we go.